Today on The Breakdown, it's gritty time. Time to get in the dirt with the mud and the pigs. It's time to look some worms in the eye and not be sure who's going to eat who when all is said and done, right? Like, you might eat them now, but they're going to get you eventually, right? And if there are enough of them in that dirt with you, enough of them in that mud, who knows? You might just be fodder for their children. This is what happens. This is who we are, okay? And there's no taking backs. There's no mulligans on this podcast. We say what we say, and we roll with it. And you're part of that as the audience, right? As the listener. You're part of that tapestry. And that all leads to, of course, this incredible hand we're going to talk about. And it's incredible mainly because it's the final hand of the main event of the World Series of Poker. Main event. Did I say main event twice? You know I did. I'm highlighting it. Where Daniel Weinmann and Stephen Jones Jr. are both going to flop top pair and make some decisions that are at least possibly unconventional. Do we like it? Should this have been the last hand of the main event of the World Series of Poker? Will the worms eat your eyes first or not? We're going to get into it all right now in The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Hey,
kind of
first time, no rehearsal. The kind where they're like, you can't see their faces, you know?
Which worms can you see their faces?
If you like look really closely, I feel like you can see certain, like the some of the worms, the not the fish worms, the like the dirt, the like farm worms. You can see their faces.
I feel like worms are just 100% ass. Like they're just ass to ass the whole way through.
They're not ass. They're like abdomen. They're all abdomen. They're not all ass.
Abdomen is an extension of ass.
You know
who?
Kim Kardashian is all ass.
She broke the internet in 2009 or whatever.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, worms without a face, man. That's my nightmare.
That's like Eyes Without a Face, the
it
song.
Is. It
worms
is exactly.
Without a Face. Yeah.
Yeah, Billy Idol.
Yeah. Thanks, Billy.
His one slow song.
You probably had another one. It just wasn't as popular.
Yeah. No, they all had a lot of them back in the 80s.
Well, you got to do your ballad.
Yeah, exactly. They all had, the ballads were the most popular songs that all the rock star, all the like hair metal bands did. Always.
Does that apply to Journey?
Journey was only ballads. They didn't really do anything else. Well, a few pop songs. But
you think Don't Stop Believin' is a ballad?
No, but they did a huge amount. They were not a hair metal band. They didn't have metal going on.
They had a lot of hair.
They were hair, yeah. They were just a pop, you know, song band that made a lot of ballads, man. Because Steve Perry.
So Wheel in the Sky, ballad?
You know, let's just cherry pick from Journey's very large catalog of songs and pick the ones that aren't ballads.
City by the Bay, ballad?
I don't know that song. City by the Bay?
Or, yeah.
That's not it. That's... I wanna be in
yeah.
That song.
Yeah.
That's not called City by
the Bay. What's
it
called?
That's not Wheel in the Sky, is it?
No. Wheel in the Sky.
No, I understand, but I wanna be in the city by the bay. Oh.
Is that a ballad?
Oh, when the lights go down in the city. I think it's called that. When the lights go down in the city. It's not called City by the Bay.
Okay, whatever.
That's what I'm gonna say.
Is it a ballad?
Yes.
What are the Journey ballads that you're claiming? Name 10. You said they're all ballads.
They're all ballads. And I could name 10 right now. In fact, I have a tattoo. Not on me, but I have a tattoo. I've acquired it.
Uh-huh.
And
like an NFT, you can acquire tattoos.
No. It's physical.
Well, what I'm saying is
yeah.
It's similar to an NFT in that you don't have physical possession of it.
No, I do. I'm saying I have it.
Oh.
Not in my hand, but it's in my home.
Oh, okay.
It was once with someone else.
The worms got them.
I don't know if they're expired. I can speak to that. I bought the tattoo as an individual purchase, you know?
This is dark.
It doesn't have to be.
But it is. So 10 Journey ballads?
Yeah. There are a lot of Journey songs on that tattoo, is what I'm saying. Uh-huh. I could look at that tattoo and read you off ballad after ballad after ballad.
How about,
but I'm not going to do that.
How about name one?
Really? Name one? I feel like I could name one. Well, given some then faithfully, faithfully. Yes, that is definitely a ballad.
Okay, you got me.
Ooh, thank God. I don't know if I was going to get there.
That was a close one.
It's like, I know there have to be some. Yeah. They, that's who they are, man. This Faithfully is a really good song.
This is a deep cut from a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I think the best Jonathan ever tricked me was convincing me that people of his age, and so he and another of our friends are a similar age, which is 15 years older than I am, and were, you know, of music listening age when Journey was popular.
Yes, for sure.
And Foreigner was popular. Yeah. And I have strong opinions about Foreigner, that they have one good song and that the rest of the songs are garbage, and I don't think Foreigner is very good.
Mm-hmm.
And Jonathan convinced me with pretending that he was texting this other guy, like, that at the time, Foreigner was widely considered to be better than Journey.
Yeah.
And I believed him, because how could I know? Right, I was basically a baby. So
you could have known because you listened to their music.
Well, yeah, obviously Journey's clearly better.
Yeah,
but but you convinced me. So
I know.
You know, I give you props for that.
I'm kind of upset that that's the best I ever got you in your mind.
Unless there's something else that I have not yet been revealed. You know, but
I feel like there are things that have been revealed.
Of the things that have been revealed, when have you gotten me better?
I can't remember anymore. That stuff doesn't stay with me the way it stays with you. You know, like I'm like, got him, and I move on with my life because I don't care anymore. It was about the moment.
Or is it because you can't remember anything ever?
It's also that. It's both. It's both.
It's the worms. You blame the worms because they eat the brain first.
When you dream of worms without faces, there's not much left in your brain space for anything else.
And also, that probably is indicative that there are worms without faces in your brain at that moment causing you to dream about worms without faces.
Maybe that's a good thing.
It could be.
Do you ever see Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan? It's a long time ago.
I did not see it.
There's this bit where they capture like Kirk and three other dudes, including a red shirt dude, and Khan like wants them to talk and they won't talk or something. And they take these fucking worms with these like little like tongs, these little metallic tongs, and they put them on their earlobe, and the worms like crawl into their ear hole,
uh-huh,
and they start screaming, and it's like that worms are like doing like boring into their fucking head, and it was very disturbing. And I don't think those worms had faces.
So that's a good point. On the opposite side of worms that inhabit your body, I know you're not a fan of the show Futurama, but I did enjoy that show, and there was an episode of Futurama in which there is a race of intelligent worms, microscopic intelligent worms that are parasitic. And they go into human bodies, and the main character, Fry, has this happen to him. But they make you better in all these ways. They, like, exercise your muscles for you and like, rewire your brain. And just
so you
make
like it.
They make you into, like, a super smart person.
So why is it parasitic instead of symbiotic?
I guess it's symbiotic, yeah.
Okay.
Although, you know, the upshot of the episode is that you kind of lose yourself in the process, so it's better not to have...
So it is sort of... it ends up being parasitic. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe you have those kinds of worms.
Because I'm so fit and smart.
Have you noticed
happy.
Your muscles getting... I haven't noticed anything like
Look,
that for
I'm,
you.
I'm flexing for Grant right now with both arms. What do you think?
That's flexing?
You know...
It looks like you got a spider bite over there.
I do.
Like a legit...
some sort of bite.
Yeah.
But look, how about this arm? You can't see because the shirt's blocking it. Now I'm giving you the full gun.
Oh, yeah, no. That's
full
true.
Gun, buddy.
It's true. It's basically...
Top gun.
I didn't know I was doing a podcast with The Rock.
Yeah. This bicep is called Top Gun, and this one's called Maverick.
Oh, okay.
This one's called Iceman, and this one's called Kevin Hart.
All right.
So that's four.
I think Kevin Hart could have been a good Iceman, by the way, if they did it like instead of Maverick being a continuation of Top Gun, if they just did a reboot where they do it again.
Yeah.
And they have Kevin Hart be Iceman. Who plays Maverick? It's Kevin Pollak, obviously. Two Kevins.
I'm so happy that we are past the point where Kevin Hart is in everything.
Yeah,
I'm
he
just
was
so pleased.
He was
with that.
The biggest thing in the world for 5 years, I'd say.
He was like, I'm just going to say yes to everything. Sign everything.
And it was a guarantee that his movies did well. People liked him.
Yeah, no, that's why they kept signing him to those deals. And he kept like, I don't care. Sure.
And he just did the same shit every time, right?
I don't know. I've never watched any of them.
Well, I mean, anytime that I see him in a movie that I didn't see it for him, but like he's cast in a lot of movies over the course of, you know, 2011 to 2016 or whatever, he's the same guy every time.
I mean, that's the best work if you can get it.
Yeah,
really.
For sure.
Who wants to be Daniel Day-Lewis when you can be Kevin Hart?
Yeah, good for him, really. Yeah. Like, great job finding that
But
for
also,
yourself.
Good for us that he's not in lots of movies anymore.
Yeah.
Like, whew.
We got through it. But there's always going to be somebody like that, right? I can't think of who it is now, but there's always going to be somebody like that.
Yeah, I don't know who it is either. But It's something for like a minute. It was Tiffany Haddish. Also, now I think about it, she was suddenly in a lot of movies, but not like Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart was like, it was constant. It was weird, actually. It was past the normal level of it.
Well,
you know,
The Rock was doing kind of a similar thing. Although I liked The Rock a lot more.
I mean, The Rock was in a lot of movies, but that was the typical like I'm the action star of the moment. I'm in a lot of movies thing. It was a little different than I'm just in everything that comes out forever, and I'm doing the same thing in them. I think, probably. I don't even know. Anyway, enough Kevin Hart thinging.
Well, he is
Kevin Hart's without faces.
Be in this hand. You know,
he is the garbage person.
He plays poker. He does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of people play poker, though.
Yeah, but he's like played on Poker Stars streams and stuff.
Yeah. I remember.
Name another celebrity who's done that ever.
Kevin Pollak. In fact,
I said celebrity.
Oh, that was cold. Brad Garrett. Ray Romano. Matt Damon.
Somebody who wasn't in Everybody Loves Raymond.
I named two guys.
No, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck were recurring. they were the cousins.
Yeah. Ronaldo. I can do this all day, dog.
Okay, keep going.
Oh.
You said you could do it all day.
I did say that. Michael Phelps.
Oh, yeah. He was really into small three bets. Super small three bets.
Everyone was doing small three bets back then, but he went even smaller, right? People believed him, though, if I recall. Paul Pierce. Does that count?
He played in the main event once.
He's played in multiple main events. Okay. He played in the Richard Seymour played. Is he famous?
He's not really famous.
Like, I mean, they act like he was famous because no one is famous.
I mean,
really,
if you cared about football in the mid-2000s, then you would knew who Richard Seymour was. But if you didn't care about football, it wasn't like LeBron James where you don't know the sport.
Agreed.
Like, you don't know who Richard Seymour
is. Yeah, I mean, they were like Big C, and I'm like, I was a Patriots fan. I never heard anyone call him that. Yeah. Like, I don't know. That's his nickname. Okay, you know, yeah.
He was like the 18th best defensive player in the league or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Yes.
Magnus Carlsen.
Yeah, he's famous.
He's famous. He plays.
Yeah, he might actually become like a poker player instead of a chess player.
Probably not.
He's so good at chess. Why would you stop?
I feel like that window's sort of passed for him. He's back. Like, he hasn't played poker in a while, I don't think. That I know of. Adam 22. I can do this forever. Famous people. Let's go. But anyway, but let's not. Let's talk about this hand or something else.
Ah. Okay.
Can we talk about Weinman without a face in my dreams? Daniel Weinman?
Daniel Weinman without a face. Yeah. You didn't mention that part.
Well, what do you mean?
I'm trying to imagine what it looked like in that moment where he hit the jack without a face, though. Because his face had so much expression.
Incredible expression, yeah.
Yeah.
You would really miss out without that. And in my dreams, they're haunting.
Yeah. Is it like a darkness or is it like the color of his skin but pulled over, like no face?
Yeah. It's like a Muppet without the eyes and nose and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's quite haunting, yeah.
It's weird. It's like in The Matrix when he's like, how will you make a phone call if you do not have a mouth? But the mouth part, which is now just all skin, whole face.
Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do.
It's like a bald guy's head, but for their face.
Yeah, I get
you
it.
You know?
Instead of not having hair, he doesn't have facial features.
Right. Exactly. You get it. Yeah. It's like that.
Yeah.
It's like if a basketball, you know, was flesh colored and head shaped and didn't have features.
So the word basketball was not important there.
Well, it gets you a good anchor point to start with. You know.
A globe, perhaps. Yeah. All right. This hand was suggested.
Yes.
On Discord.
Sure.
By Kev, Mike F, and Optimus Klang. I think that's two in a row for Optimus Klang.
Me too. Kev?
Kev.
Kev.
Let's see if there were any on Twitter, because we didn't look. And by that, I mean X, of course.
That's right. They changed the name. Although it's still Twitter.com, and Microsoft owns the trademark to X, so we'll see how that works out.
And the app hasn't changed on my stuff. It hasn't, like, updated, but it's still a little bluebird.
Oh, really? Oh, for my icon, it's an X now.
On your Apple stuff or on your Android stuff or both?
On my Apple. On my browser.
Well, when I open the app, it's a blooper. Well,
I don't have a fucking Twitter app. I'm not a clone. I'm not a robot clone.
You're really taking a stand.
Are you a robot clone?
You're very impressive. You're basically off the grid. It's amazing. How do you do it? Did you have to learn how to make carrots out of nothing by yourself?
You can grow them from the ground. I was thinking yesterday. So Grant and I, we were at dinner last night with some friends, and just as we were talking about whatever we're talking, I suddenly had this flash of like 2 weeks ago when you started talking about you asking if I went to reverse college. And how fucking great that was. Like, what an incredible thing to think of.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I just was like laughing to myself and was almost going to bring it up. I was like, eh, the conversation went in a different direction. I'll leave.
It went in some serious direction.
Oh, my God.
No, we can't
I want
that.
To talk about it so bad.
But that's, you know.
Can we keep it anonymous and say anything?
No, let's just say okay. Who it was, but not say what it was.
Oh, can't we do it the other way? It's so much better.
No.
Okay.
Because some of you know who it was.
Oh, yeah, you're
just,
right.
Just so Wonka from Poker Time is one of the people who was at dinner. Let's just say he has an interesting life.
Well, what I did say after he told us this thing, which we cannot apparently repeat.
No, we're not going to do
it. I said, "It like you always deliver. Like every single time we... have dinner with you or hang out with you or whatever, you always tell us some true story about yourself that blows us away. Not like, you know, that really happened. Oh, my God, that's amazing. But more like, no, like how could that be? You didn't choose that.
These are the decisions that you make?
This cannot be real. And then we spend an hour sort of telling him he's a crazy person and his life's going to end terribly, essentially.
Yeah, but it was a good time.
Oh, we had a great time.
Yeah.
Anyway, fine.
All right.
Moving on.
Let's talk about Monday.
Okay.
So this was, as we've discussed before, ridiculous as far as payout structure.
Sure.
Second place was like $4 and first place was $105
million. $6.5 million for second, $12.1 for first.
An absurd thing in a 10K buy-in. They should never do that. And of course, they don't facilitate deals. There was a lot of speculation after, especially the Walton bust out hand with eights that felt like a ridiculous hand that... perhaps they made a deal three ways, but
yes.
But I know Weinman's Corner claimed after the event that no deal was made.
Yeah.
And I kind of believe them.
I don't know why Sean D would feel the need to tweet it if it wasn't true. He could just ignore it and be like, who cares what they think? I'm not going to say anything. He doesn't really get anything by people knowing.
When I say Weinman's Corner, I'm talking about a lot of poker heavyweights who have a lot of clout in the poker world.
Yeah, and clearly all have a piece of him.
Yeah.
Like Sean D... opened up and said he had a piece of him, you know, like, and said, like, no, we got it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Again, no reason for him to lie about that. So, I'm inclined to believe it, too, but it was weird because the play seemed so fast, not just with that hand, but with other hands. And one might speculate, perhaps, this hand as well.
Maybe, but I just, yeah, I mean, I definitely get, there's, like, two different ways to look at this. The principled way where you... look at the money and what the money actually means in real life, and it doesn't matter what your edge is, and you're like, I should make a deal because it's ridiculous to gamble for this much money when there's no guarantees in poker.
Uh-huh.
But from a pure poker perspective, if the numbers changed to be like 30 times less, and you're Daniel Weinman, and you're three ways with these two other guys who you clearly have a massive edge over, you would never make a deal.
I mean, Daniel Weinman doesn't have to make a deal with these other guys, though, either, right? He can make a deal with his backers, which is probably what he did.
Yeah.
So, like, when they were three-handed... they took the day off when they were three-handed. Not the day off. They ended at three-handed and came back the next day. So he had, you know, 12 hours to negotiate with Sean Deeb and company where they say, we'll buy, you know, this percentage of you right now. We'll buy you out of this much more percentage of you at this EV, you know, because if they think he's got the edge and he could give away just a tiny bit of EV, just the smallest bit, and still, like, really cash big. So he can make any level of deal he
effectively wants. Effectively prepaid insurance.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like making a deal to some degree. He could do that for sure.
Right, but it should not affect the play in that case, of course.
It could affect his play a little bit, but no, in theory, I wouldn't think he would do that and be like, well, who cares now?
Yeah, now
he would
now never give away. Now I'm going to fuck it up for my backers. Yeah. Like,
he's also never going to give away all of himself. Of course, his incentives will still line up with his backers. Yeah. They're not stupid enough to...
So I'm inclined to believe there is no deal.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think so either. I don't think this hand is indicative of that either way, quite frankly.
Which just ultimately makes it so ridiculous. They're playing for almost $6 million.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what you sign up for, really.
$5.5 million.
Yeah, an absurd thing to be playing for.
Yeah.
It's just...
It's the fucking main event, and that's what happens. That's all I can say.
It is, but
it's dumb.
You know, it's engineered to happen that way. Like, as we've talked about, it could obviously, first place could be $10 million. It could be $8 million, and you could have...
I have real complaints about all this, but we've already done this.
Yeah,
this
so here we are.
This is well-worn territory.
Here we are. Second place is a lot less than first. One and $2.5 million are the blinds.
Okay.
Stephen Jones. Right, Stephen?
Stephen Jones Jr.
Stephen Jones Jr. Sounds like a boxer, just probably because of Roy Jones Jr., has $170 million in front of him as the effective stack. They are very deep heads up. $170 million on $2.5 million big blind.
Okay.
So, you know, it's not like a knockout blow is right around the corner at that stack.
It's like 65 blinds or so? Yeah, 64 blinds.
Yeah. Okay. It is an incredible structure, this main event we have.
Yeah.
He raises to $7 million from the small blind slash button with Jack-8 offsuit. Seems fine.
Absolutely.
I think...
I'm surprised he raised so much, but whatever.
I would actually wonder about raising more.
Oh, okay. Because you think you're getting called so much?
Because I think Weinman's way better than Jones. And Foxton was coaching Jones.
Yes, he was.
He knows Weinman's better than Jones.
Of course he does.
So I like $7 million. I like more even better.
So you think, like, if Foxton was coaching Weinman, let's say, and Weinman was opening Jack 8 on the button, he'd be opening to like 6 or 6.5.
Or 5 maybe even.
Oh, right. Because it's 2.5.
Yeah.
Yeah. 5, 5.5.
Yeah.
Probably 5.5.
Yeah.
Is most likely my guess. But whatever. Some amount, some very small amount. And this is almost a full 3X.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
Like when your head's up, you really have an opportunity to up the variance whenever you want. And it's a good idea to do it if you have a big skill disadvantage, which Jones clearly does.
And you have position. Like this,
right.
this is the time. You wouldn't want to do it out of position very much comparatively to when you're in position.
And there's no ICM consideration because we're heads up. So it doesn't matter if you bust because you up to the variance. You know, like that's just part of the deal that you're accepting when you decide to up the variance heads up.
Yep.
Anyway, it makes it $7 million. I like that it's big sizing. I would prefer even bigger. Whatever. Weinman has $431 million. Heads up in the main event. He is approaching 200 blinds. What a life. What a deal.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Man.
He's got King Jack off, which is a hand that's just not good enough with Jones's stack depth to 3-bet, I would say, when Jones opens to $7 million.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that. Not good enough to 3-bet. It's not good enough to call a 4-bet.
Yeah.
It can definitely be good enough to 3-bet.
What I mean is it's too good and not good enough at the same time, right? We just don't...
Yeah.
We want to see a flop with this hand.
Right.
We don't care that much about getting that $7 million by getting him to fold. That's not a huge win for us. It's fine.
I mean, some of the value is winning right now. Some of the value is when he calls and we're beating his range. You know, we're in good shape against his range.
Yeah.
That's the other value. If he's folding all our 3-bets... This feels like it's a little too good to turn into a bluff.
Yeah.
Which is what we'd effectively be doing because we're folding to the 4-bet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I like calling. That's my favorite play.
Okay.
What do you think?
I mostly call here too.
That's what Weinman does.
I mean, I'd be thinking about how often have I been 3-betting. And if I haven't been 3-betting a lot, I might turn this into a 3-bet a little bit more, you know, just to like
have some
3-bets.
I'd just rather have King 4.
Yeah.
You know,
that's fair.
Why do it with this hand?
Yeah. That's really fair.
So Weinman calls. We got Jack 8. We got King Jack. We got Nitro betting.
We do have Nitro betting, and you know where it is.
It's right in your face.
In your goddamn eye. That's right.
Yeah, you piece of...
you're fleshy.
It's the worms.
Basketball-like
Nitro
eye
betting
with
is
no
taking the form of worms, and it's burrowing into your brain.
Don't be afraid of them. Allow them in.
Yeah, they might be the type that make you stronger and smarter.
You will die.
We won't know until we try.
You will die, but you are going to die anyway.
So to accept the worms...
Press one.
Use the link... in the description of this podcast, that will allow the worms to burrow slightly deeper, which gets you great value, Jonathan. Yeah.
real opportunities that you otherwise wouldn't get. Some coupon codes, perhaps?
No coupon codes.
Oh, okay.
No, it's more like special sports betting promotions that Nitro Betting does just for our people.
It's basically a coupon code.
It's essentially a coupon code, except with gambling.
With money.
And there's also the Poker Guys monthly tournament. There's casino games on Nitro Betting. They don't mess around with your money when you bink something and you want to cash out. You know, they give it to you in 90 minutes or less.
I love that.
That's pretty nice.
I really do love that.
We do it all the time.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
For real.
Yeah. They pay us. Like, for these sponsorships, they pay us through the same portal that you have your money on in Nitro Betting. And we get our money every month. We've been doing it for 7 years. Never had a problem.
Zero problems in 7 fucking years. They are awesome.
They are solid, as is the sports book, where you get cool special promotions.
They are smooth, as is like the fleshy exterior of the faceless man.
Right. Or a freshly poured Nespresso.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. All of these things. And a LeBron James jump shot.
It's not so smooth anymore.
It depends.
I mean, he's not really a smooth. He's got kind of a stiff elbow, you know, on that jump shot.
It depends.
You know who has a smooth, buttery jump shot, although he never reached his potential? It's like a J.R. Smith jump shot. He's got nice form.
You really lost me there.
He did. If you know what? After this, we're going to watch a video of J.R. Smith.
I'm looking forward to
jump shots. And you're going to be like, damn it, I'm wrong again.
I'm always wrong.
It's just like...
Yeah,
determinism and ethnic, which we don't have to get into.
I really thought you were going to go Pete Sampras and Blake Bortles.
Oh, well, that's a drunk sports deep cut for those who care.
Some do.
Yeah, they should.
250 of you care.
I think it was more.
Whatever.
Like 350.
It's not enough.
Anyway, here we are. We're back.
Okay, back to the hand.
Yeah, we've returned to the jackgate of Daniel Jones. Not Daniel Jones. That's an NFL quarterback. Steven Jones and Daniel Weinman. There we go. Those are the names of the players. Jones has jackgate off. Weinman has king jack off. The flop is jack of spades, five of spades, deuce of diamonds. Nobody has a spade. It's a jack high flop. Jones is going to lose some money in this hand unless he hits an eight or like ace-ace.
No question.
Right, ace-ace doesn't help him.
Nope.
Never. Ace-five.
Ace-five, right. Yeah. Ace-deuce, ace, whatever.
Yeah. All right. Weinman checks. Seems normal. Play and flow. It's it's a dry board, except for the spades, that Jones is likely to c-bet on with the majority of his range.
Mm-hmm.
All right, is Jones, are you mixing some checks in here?
Not too many. I imagine we're c-betting a fair amount. And, you know, we can certainly have some checks, but top pair is a very strong hand in this, in when your head's up and you get called by a much wider range, right? Weinman's not folding that many hands.
There's a lot of gut shots that Weinman can continue with. There's spade draws, obviously.
Any pair. Ace highs.
Yeah.
He's going to continue with all that stuff for sure, right? Weinman's good, so he's not going to be just playing fit or fold on this flop.
Yeah, if he has like king 10 with one spade, he will continue.
Yeah, I really like betting here also because the board's a little bit wet. It's not wildly wet, but jack 5, deuce 2 spades. We can have a lot of draws that we would want to bet here, so we need to balance that with a bunch of our value. This is among our better value. Of course, we want to check back a few top pairs here and there, but I think mostly we're betting here.
I agree. How do you want to size it? 16.5 in the pot.
I want to bet, we don't have to bet that much, I don't think. You know, 6-7 million.
That's what Jones does. He bets 6 million.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if this is another spot to up the variance and just bet more.
Huh.
Just like force Weinman to not make these easy decisions with hands like gut shots.
Like ace four or whatever like that. He might be check raising those hands anyway.
He might be.
But so when you say that, so you're thinking more like 10 million?
Yeah.
That'd be another way to go. I think if the five was a nine of spades, I'd be more inclined to go bigger because I just think, even though I know he's calling from the big blind or heads up, so he's just wide.
Yeah.
But it feels like that's going to interact with more possible straight draws and more stuff. I don't hate what you're saying. I think it's reasonable for sure.
Anyway, Jones bet six.
Okay.
All right. Now you're Daniel Weinman. You have top pair, second kicker. It's pretty good. Very likely to be the best hand.
Very likely.
You have no spades, so you unblock spades. You don't block any of the gut shots.
Right.
What's your move?
Okay. We're never folding, obviously. So we're either calling or we're raising. If we're raising, I think this hand is too good to fold.
Right. We have to go with it if we raise.
Right. So we need to. So that's part of the plan. So we have to understand that we have to be willing to be that guy and go with it. And if we're willing to be that guy, I think a raise is fine because we're going to have probably a bunch of raises on a board like this, which jack, five, deuce, not great for his raising range. I know it's heads up. I know he's on the button, so he's going to have a lot of stuff. But still, there's no aces, there's no kings, there's no queens. That's good. It's wet-ish where we could have a lot of hands that we would be check raising for as bluffs, as semi-bluffs, right?
Yeah.
Like gut shots and, of course, the spades and the like. Maybe even sometimes just two back doors. Because we're heads up and there's going to be a lot of c-bets. And this is a board that it doesn't connect that much with that much stuff, right? So, yeah. So we're definitely going with it if we check raise. The question is it better to check raise and potentially have to go with it right now? Or is it better to call, understanding that sometimes we're going to get sucked out on, sometimes there's going to be action killing cards. We may really limit our ability to make a big pot here. To me, one of the biggest questions with all this is like, how many times does Jones have like double and triple barrel bluffs?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the answer to that.
I don't either.
He's getting coached by Alex Foxen. I don't know how much he's absorbing from Alex Foxen. It's hard to absorb in this type of moment, in this type of environment. No matter how good your coach is, it's probably not a lot getting in.
I would think so. Even when I was thinking about like Jamie Gold at the final table back in the day in 2006, basically every hand that was played at that final table, c-bet, call, check on the turn like 100% of the time almost. Like Jamie was in it or not, but and almost every hand Jamie was in, no matter how strong his hand was, he was checking the turn. Like he was pot controlling or giving the appearance of pot controlling.
Yeah.
Like it's just, yeah. So he would bluff the river a lot, but that was it. Like you couldn't win an insanely big pot off him if he was trying to bluff most of the time anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
so I would think with $5.5 million that they're playing for, I don't know we're going to see Jones do that many triple barrel bluffs, and I wouldn't count on that.
Well, He probably should have them, but I don't know if he's going to.
Exactly. Like, yeah. You know, you should do a lot of things, but at the main event final table, a lot of those plays are just not available to people because, you know, because they just are not willing to do them.
Yep.
They're not willing to take certain risks.
Right. So Weinman does race. He raises to $18.5 million. I like it.
I like it too. Like, we should just call sometimes, but we should raise sometimes
if we just look at the spectrum of hands available on this board, this is such a good hand. It's fine to go with it. Sometimes we're losing, but it's honestly pretty rare.
I mean, we're just not losing it very much, right? There's the two pairs that are beating us are only suited two pairs, pretty much. I don't know that Jones is opening Jack 5 off or Jack Deuce off or 5 Deuce off. He may just fold those hands.
Yeah, I agree. He's got over pairs. He's got Ace Jack. He's got sets.
Right. And, you know, if he has those things, he may get it all anyway. But this way we can, if he's got a worse hand than ours, if he has two nines.
Yeah.
This is a white board. He's not going to fold to a check raise.
Right. If he has eventually, maybe, if he has two spades, he might just go with it. And we are going to be favorites against that hand to win the main event.
Exactly. It's going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
Like worst case, we're 50-50 against the nut flush draw. Right.
Right. But,
or I guess he could have two. He could have ace queen of spades.
Yeah.
Fine. We're slight dogs.
Yeah.
Fine. But like, it's never that bad unless he's got a set of fives or something
or
like that.
Or ace jack or queens, yeah. Kings, or aces.
And that's unlucky, but oh well. Like, yeah. Guess what? We're still in okay shape. He's going to have a somewhat of a chip lead on us, and we're okay.
It'll be almost even, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, let's see. No, Jones would have $340 million, and we would have 200 and something.
Yeah, yeah.
260.
All right. But, yeah,
but still, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
It's 20 blinds difference or so, more than that.
And of course, Jones could have a hand like he does, which is an amazing spot where it's got draws. And it's just a hand you can't fold to a check raise. Yeah. And you have this hand in complete jail. It's awesome.
Yeah. I wonder if Weinman is rooting for the shove here or if he's rooting for the call.
He's rooting for probably the call and no spade, would be my guess.
That's
like the combo
good.
Of the call and the seven of clubs, you know, on the turn.
Mm.
Something like that.
Yeah. That's a pretty good combo.
Yeah. So Jones calls the $18.5 million.
Sure.
I don't see anything else you could do. I guess you could justify a 3-bet if you really wanted
wow.
to.
No, I think it's a mistake.
Yeah.
Think about, because like the hands that are really strong draws might just 4-bet all in. Like ace 4 of spades.
Yeah.
It's like, let's go. And now you're like, is this good? Like I'm getting it in with 50% equity at best.
Yeah.
And the hands that fold are like the weaker draws that we, you know, are kind of crushing.
Like 4-6.
Yeah, like they've got 3-4 outs, fine. And a spade kills action sometimes. Like, you know, we have position. We can use it. I like it just a call for sure.
I do too, especially in position.
Especially also on the flop where there's two cards to come. And so the ace 4 of spades is like running 50-50 against us, right?
Yep. All right. He calls. The pot is some amount that I didn't write down.
Good.
But we can do the math.
Well, it's $37 million added to whatever we already had.
53.5 million. Yeah, $53.5 million.
Okay.
I'm going to write that in the description.
Well,
so we always have
right.
that.
And I think it's good that you're narrating it as you do it so the people can sort of play along at home, you know?
You know what? I open the kimono. The turn is the 4 of clubs.
Yeah.
So it's now Jack 5, Deuce 4 with 2 spades.
Okay.
This does complete
a few things.
A few things. I mean, 3-6 and ace 3 get there. They're both very unlikely, especially for Jones. Weinman could have those more than Jones.
I guess either player in theory could have 4-5 once in a while. You wouldn't expect Weinman to have it that often.
I don't see Weinman with 4-5 too often. Jones, I think, is probably going to have to call with 4-5 after he bets the flop.
He could have turned it, but he could also have a lot of other fives. Like 4-5, not so much more than most other fives anyway. Like
right.
Who cares?
So although this is a straight completing card, it's not usually going to improve either player.
Yeah, a 4 of spades would be a much, much tougher
Yeah, it's a different situation.
Yeah.
So Weinman should be pretty happy with this card.
I think we just have to keep on rolling with this card.
That's what Weinman does. He bets $38 million into 53.5. How do you feel about the sizing?
He could go even bigger if he wants.
That's if we want to do maximum charge, like any ace-x of spades now has a combo draw, I think we'd like them just to jam, right?
The only reason not to go like $60 million into this $53.5 million chip pot is maybe Jones doesn't feel like he has fold equity for his spade draws or something like that. If we do that,
maybe
going 38, you feel like you definitely have fold equity. You got 146 back, right?
Yeah.
So maybe that's what Wyman's trying to do. Is like if you have spades, pull the trigger, buddy. I know you can't. I know you're gonna go all in. You're not gonna fold spades here, right?
Yeah.
most of the time anyway, especially if you have an overcard with the spades. And I'm just a two-thirds favorite to win the main event right now.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good deal. So maybe that's why he did it.
All right. So Weinman, as a modern poker player who studies, is going to have some give-ups despite the check raise on the flop, right?
For sure.
Like in 2006, the Jamie Gold year, if you check raise the flop, you 100% bet the turn. That was just life back then, right? Yeah. But that's not how it is now. There are some give-ups. Weinman did not give up. So how are you looking at this as Jones? What type of a range do you have Weinman on?
Well, Weinman can definitely have some two-pair hands, for sure. He could have Jack-5 suited, although we block it a little bit. 5-deuce suited, Jack-deuce suited. No question, right?
Yeah.
He can have better jacks and play them this way. We have to believe that's possible, right? It's not insane for him to have queen jack or king jack here.
He can have deuce, deuce, or 5-5.
He can have deuce, deuce, or 5-5. He can have ace 3 or 6-3.
Yeah.
He can also... So that's all the strong stuff that's a problem.
And it's only 6-3 suited. He raised to 7 million pre. He's probably not calling.
Yeah, you're probably right. Probably you're right. I'm not 100% sure if that's true. But either way, those are all problem hands for us. And then what are the hands that he can have that we are beating? Well, he can have spades for sure. Could he ever have a hand like 4-6, had a gutter on the flop, turned a pair and decided to continue rather than check?
That might be one of the hands that fits in the check category.
I think it mostly is.
Just hope for the check back, hope to improve.
We have showdown value. Yeah. Why blow up the pot now kind of thing, right? I agree.
Because Jones isn't folding spades anyway, right? If he had one of the other straight draw type hands, he either has the same hand or he made the straight or he, you know, he's not going to fold that often.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. So yeah, I imagine it makes sense that this is a check. Sometimes the pros surprise me with this kind of a hand and bet here. Yeah. But mostly it's a check, I would agree. So we can really only beat spades, right? Does Weinman ever have a worse jack?
No, I don't think so. I think the kicker was a big part of the raise on the flop.
I think you're probably right. The kicker's kind of awesome because it does a bunch of things for us, right? One is we beat other jacks, almost except for one. Two is we block pocket kings. Actually, that's kind of great in this spot, right? Three is if somehow we're losing to a two pair, it's good to have an overcard to the jack. I mean, I guess an overcard to the five is all that matters, though. Really, it's all the same. But blocking pocket kings a little bit, there's three less combos of the overpair. That's nice.
Yeah, I don't think Weinman's raising Jack 10 and weaker for kind of that reason.
Yeah. Queen Jack probably. That's where it would begin, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't think Jack 8 is ever beating the value raised Jack range.
Okay, I think you're right. That's probably true. So we're really just down to we can only beat spades. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do we proceed against that range? Because we cannot fold at this point.
No.
We still have top pair. It's heads up.
There's no folding.
Yeah.
We probably think that if we call and a brick comes on the river, we're just going to probably call all in, right? Most of the time.
If we call and it's like a 7, that's brickish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, a 9, whatever. Just something that like a 9 of not spades.
Yeah.
Like probably we're just going to have to call.
Yeah.
Okay. So, do we believe that Wyman's going to shove missed spades on the river? Or is he going to give up because we called twice? We call the check raise, we call the big bet on the turn. It's a lot of our stack is in there, and he's not going
to
try.
Missed spades is not a great hand to shove with because we block what we want Jones to have.
Sure is. Maybe if he had missed spades with a straightening card, a card that completes the straights, those are the ones he goes for it with, but... Mostly, there aren't that many of those. Right?
I mean, we could be in a pretty good situation where if Weinman has spades, he is giving up on the river and we get to check and win.
Right.
Like, and he goes check, check, and we win. Like, this could be the last bet that happens unless we become beat on the river.
The other way to look at it, and I wonder if Jones was thinking about this, is the only way to get max value from spades is to jam now. Like, we either
spades
shut him out.
Never calling.
Well, then that's great. We cut out all their equity. If they decide to find a call, then we get the full double.
Yeah.
When they miss. But the point is, like, if we're calling all in on missed spades, that means we're going to have to fold if he jams, because if we don't think he's going to jam missed spades very often, right?
I think if the river comes and it's not a spade, or it is, I think if we call...
We're fucked, basically, on rivers.
Well, no, we're not fucked if he checks.
Oh, of course. I'm saying, any river that comes that he shoves that isn't an 8 of non-spades, we fold. Oh, I guess a jack, we're going to have to call in a jack, too, right? Just because we have to.
Probably.
Do we have to?
I don't know. I think we don't.
It's probably too strong to fold heads up. Okay, well, let's not worry about that. That's for another day. That part of it.
I feel like we can call here and basically fold to on all rivers that aren't an eight and just hope for a check.
Okay, so that's play one. The other option is really to move all in and shut out his equity, right? To shut out his drawing equity. That would be the other play.
Yeah, so I guess with these two scenarios in mind, the most we're ever going to make on this hand is this $38 million. We're not making the rest.
Right. We can't have it.
So there's no way to really up the variance effectively in a way that makes sense, you know, in the, like, I'm a worse player way, right?
Right. Now, we also have to be correct that Wyman isn't going to shove Miss Spades, by the way, on the river.
Yeah.
Because if we're wrong about that, this whole plan is a disaster.
Like, I mean, when Jones calls, let's say Jones calls the turn.
Yeah.
He has a jack or better a lot, if not always.
Maybe he could have two tens.
Maybe.
I mean, jack eight plays similarly to two tens, except we don't block the jack. That's
a big difference.
I agree.
Big, big difference.
But that doesn't mean he can't have two tens.
I feel like Jones just folds the turn with two tens so often.
Hmm. Maybe. Maybe you're right. Because, like, you don't have to get involved here, yeah, right, with two tens. You can be like, I'm just beat sometimes, and who cares? And, like, I'll just wait.
Yeah.
I haven't put that much money in yet. Like, I'm about to. This is about to be an inflection point in the tournament, right?
Yeah.
But if I fold right now, it's not. I've only put in, what, $25 million total. I still have almost $150 million.
Yeah.
I'm doing fine. I have 60 blinds. Yeah. You're probably right.
I don't feel like it's a good idea to shove Miss Spades if you're Wyman on the river. Maybe I'm wrong, but
even though we've decided that Jones is going to fold?
Yes. Even so.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
What hands should Jones be calling with if Spades miss and Wyman shoves?
I guess you just use distribution at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess implicit within our conversation is the jack eight is pretty low in the distribution that gets to the river on this line.
Doesn't have a spade in his hand.
Doesn't have a spade. That's good. You're right. That is good.
Doesn't block any of the straight stuff that could have been in there. That's good too.
Yeah.
So that bumps it up at least a little.
Yeah.
Is it good enough? I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know. But it actually, because it doesn't have any of those things, it might be a candidate for a call.
Just want a better kicker.
We could decide though to figure that out on the river. We could be like, well, it's going to be close. I'm not going to do the math right now. I don't have to have a plan. I'll figure that out if it comes to it.
Yep.
Because it's going to be close, and I don't know. I can take as long as I want. It's the main event. It's, you know, I can take forever to
all
think
right
about this.
So let's go to what happens.
Okay, great.
Jones moves in for $146 million.
Yes.
And a lot of people on the internet are dunking on him for this. He's been dunked on.
Yeah.
And the general argument that I've seen is, you know, you can't get called by a worse hand, which is true.
Yeah.
But there's definitely some value in this play.
Like, for sure.
There's no categorically bad play here except for folding. I think shutting out the equity certainly has value.
It does. Because your effect, once Wyman has made the bet, we're either letting him see the river for free or we're charging him the max. Those are the two options.
Yeah.
It's not really free, obviously, but he's already put those chips out there. So those chips are gone. So, but we can charge him another $100 million to see the river or not. And if we've decided as let's play it this way for a second, as Jones, that we're actually calling all in on the river, because we don't block the spades and we don't block the straights when stuff misses, that's a reason not to move in, actually,
yeah,
right? Because then we can capture more value.
Yeah.
So the question is, do we move in because we know we're folding on the river anyway? The thing is, we blow up our whole tournament every time we're called.
Yep.
That is the problem with this play.
I think I slightly prefer a call to play, but I don't think this is a terrible play.
I can really understand when we block the jack ourselves, where we're like, I don't want to give him this free card.
The spades missed. Straights are unlikely.
Yeah.
It's unlikely that he made two pair on that card. Pretty much never made two pair on that card, right? He's not check raising jack four or four or five.
I don't think so. I don't think he's check raising four or five. Again, sometimes players mix in that kind of stuff, but usually more in full ring than in like heads up. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they'll do medium and bottom pair if they don't feel they have a lot of other bluffs. This is the kind of board, though, where they should have other bluffs. Wyman should have other bluffs.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to make bottom pair a bluff or something weird with it.
Yeah.
But you can do it just to confuse your opponent sometimes, too.
So, yeah, I'm kind of ambivalent on the move-in. I think it's fine. I think my preference is to call, but I'm not going to say it's a bad play.
I think I would call here, too, But I understand why he does it. And I've been in a spot like this before, with a better hand, admittedly. But I got knocked out of a tournament, a main event type tournament, not $10,000 buy-in, but like $1,100 buy-in, where I opened aces and got, and it was a super wet board. It was like, you know, 10, 9, 4 with two clubs or something like that. And I had two red aces or something like that. And I got check raised by the big blind. And I called because I felt I had to. And the turn was a brick. And he bet. And I had like a pot size bet back. And I moved in because I'm like, he's getting it anyway a lot of the time. Unless a scare card comes on the river, he's getting it anyway. And this way I can shut out the equity or at least charge him fully for it. And he had a set and I was just out.
And but that, like, that play has a lot more value that you described anytime but heads up. Because ICM is a factor there. So denying equity is a much bigger deal.
Mm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Not entirely. I'm trying to take it in.
Okay. Denying equity is a bigger deal when ICM is at play because it maintains your tournament life. And your tournament life has
right
no value besides its very direct value heads up. There's no ICM.
I mean, denying your tournament life isn't the only reason to deny equity, of course.
No, but there it obviously adds to the value of denying equity.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
Right. And so in this case, that's not valuable anymore.
Yeah.
Right. Right. We've already won the most you can win without moving up one spot.
Right.
And your tournament life still has value, of course, even heads up. Let's be clear.
It does. But it's
different.
It's different. It's not like you can wait it out and make more money.
That's true. You can't ladder up.
Yeah.
That is a great, great point. And there may not be a better spot when your head's up if the guy's got a lot of chips, right? Like,
yeah.
This may be as good as it gets sometimes. Like, we have top pair. Yeah. I don't think this is a crazy bad move in or anything like that, but I think I would have called too. And had we called, by the way, probably goes check, check on the river because the river's an ace of hearts.
Yeah, that makes it four straight and an ace is obviously...
I think that scares everyone. Like, yeah. Wyman, I doubt Wyman moves in there. Wyman may be like, I'm going to check and probably call, but not sure.
Yeah.
And then Jones is like, check back instantly. I would think, like, do I win? You know, and Wyman would win a really big pot and probably win the title anyway. But Jones would still have that, you know, 100 million chips and 40 blinds and a dream baby. And dreaming probably of faceless worms that
burrow
into your brain, but still a dream nonetheless.
So anyway, Jones does move in. Wyman does call.
Yeah.
I think on this wet of a board, you kind of have to when you've decided to take this line with King Jack.
I think so, too. Wyman takes a little bit to think about it. Not very long, but a little bit.
I mean, think about how long John Sin took, right?
Well, that
was
absurd.
But it's the same scenario, where it's like the biggest spot of your life.
Yeah, sure.
No, you're allowed to take a little time.
I'm not critiquing him for taking time at all.
Fuck
I'm just,
you.
I was going to talk about a thing, but you came in and defended the undefendable. Those who do not need to be defended, you defended.
The undefendable?
I don't know. It didn't come out right. You're going to defend that, too?
I'm not going to defend anything.
Because, yeah, you're Mr. Shields and Armor.
Go ahead. Do your
thing. I don't even know what I was going to say anymore. I'm so angry.
Okay.
Okay, what was I saying? So, right, I was going to say that I think what's maybe one of the reasons why Wyman took a little bit of time here is he's thinking, like, did he call the flop and move in on the turn with the draw as opposed to just move in or, like, put in the big re-raise with the draw right away on the flop? That's not impossible, but that's less likely, right? If he had, like, overs and spades, he probably just would put in the three bet on the flop.
Yeah,
a lot.
Although I don't hate this line with overs and spades.
No, I think it's cool because it looks stronger.
Yeah.
Right. And you want to mix it in sometimes, but it's less likely than doing it on the flop for sure. And so Wyman probably took a little bit just to think about that. And he's like, my hand's too strong. If he has it, he has it. Whatever. We'll keep playing and makes the call.
And what a feeling when Jones turns over Jack Gate and he has three outs, no chops.
It's not a straight draw. He doesn't even have five outs. Like, he doesn't have a pair of fives or something,
yeah.
You know, with like a six in there or a seven in there where it's like, I have a straight draw too. None of that, you know, it's like just the pure three outs is all he's got.
What a moment.
Yeah.
And
so Jones cannot fade the 44 outer and,
yeah.
And, Wyman wins.
Yep. That's the main event. That's how it goes.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hey, first time, no rehearsal. I say fuck the second take. Night is baby scratching on vinyls until the record break. Mr. One Night is all I need. No second dates, I'm the rapper.